p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Good evening and welcome to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. My name is Abraham Asari. In tonight's edition of the program, are we in the season of strikes after the Ghana Medical Association, the National Association of Graduate Teachers, has also given the signal to embark on an industrial action? So what is NAGRAT's concern? Some aggrieved residents of Aogo in the Asantiachim North Municipality of Ashanti carry out their threats to ban funerals in protest against the mayhem being caused by Fulani herdsmen and how the issue is being handled. Is that the best solution? Liberians go to the polls to elect a new president. What are the critical issues to be considered? We'll be speaking to somebody in Liberia. Stay tuned in. You're listening to Behind the News and it's live. Text line for tonight's program is 0264418767. The text line again is 0264418767. You can also get us live at gbcghana.com. One may be tempted to think the country is in a season of strikes. First, it was the nurses trainees of Ghana who a week ago embarked on an indefinite strike. Then just last Friday, the man who used the stethoscope, the doctors, also laid down their tools. And today, a statement from the Greater Accra NAGRAT office signaled the association's intent to also go on strike by the 15th of this month if the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission fails to schedule a meeting to resolve their problems and pay 2 months' salary arrears owed them. We'll be speaking to Deputy Minister of Information Samuel Okudzeto-Blakwa on the several strikes the country seems to be having now. But first, let's speak to the Greater Accra NAGRAT on their worries. Greater Accra Regional Chairman of NAGRAT is Patrick Agboyibo, who is joining us on the telephone. Good evening to you, Mr. Agboyibo. Welcome to Radio Ghana.
Thank you.
You are going on strike from the 15th of this month. Is that the case?
We are going on strike from the 17th of this month.
From the 17th of this month?
Yes, please.
And what is the 15th October date for?
The 15th October date was the date given by the Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning for the Accountant General to pay Ghanaian teachers single fine arrears by 15th of October. 2 months arrears must be paid.
Yes, go ahead.
The meeting took place on 28th of September.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 3 days from that date, the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission must meet with stakeholders on how to pay the rest of the arrears, because the arrears is 13 months.
All right, so the rest, after, apart from the 2 months, you are supposed to meet to discuss how to pay the rest of the 13 months. Is that the case?
Yes, please.
And so you are going on strike.
The Labour Commission gives 3 days to Fair Wages to meet labor, organized labor.
So why are you going on strike? Are you going on strike because of the 2 month arrears or because of the remainder of the 13, which should be 11 months?
We are going on strike because of both. Fair Wages and Salaries Commission have not called any meeting as at Friday, 7th October, as directed by the Labour Commission.
Is that meeting supposed to...
Let me finish. And the 2 months also, a meeting with Minister of Education indicates that there's no assurance that money will be paid by 15th October. Directed by the Minister of Finance and Economic
Is that meeting with the Fair Wages Commission supposed to facilitate the payment of the 2 months arrears, or it is to discuss how the 11 months are going to be paid?
Both. That meeting, actually, Minister of Finance had already directed Accountant General to pay that money by 15th October, the 2 months arrears.
And that means that you don't need a meeting to be paid.
There are two issues. The Labour Commission also directed Fair Wages to meet stakeholders within 3 days to schedule payment of the rest of the arrears. But that has not been done.
My understanding is that if the Controller and Accountant General has been directed by the Minister of Finance to pay the 2 months arrears, that means that you do not need a meeting with the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission to discuss that payment, because directive has been given already.
Yes, that one directive has been given. But the payment of the rest, we need a meeting. To roll up the roadmap for it.
Have you made a follow-up on the 2 months arrears?
Yes, as at last week, Friday 7th.
To where?
There was no concrete evidence that by 15, the money will be paid.
When you say there was no concrete evidence, where did you go? The Ministry of Finance or the Controller and Accountant General's office?
National Executive went to the Minister of Education. They contacted Accountant General Department, and there was no concrete assurance from the Accountant General Department that they will pay the money by 15th of October.
And you believe that there is no other option except a strike?
Well, for us, this issue is not just last Friday. It started from July this year when Nagrat came out that our arrears on the sender's plan should be paid. Because Fair Wages and the Ministry of Youth and Employment knew that July teachers were going on vacation for long back, they quickly came out that by September ending, every man will be paid. All the arrears will be paid. That was what they told us. But they forgot that though we went on holiday, schools will resume sooner than later. Now we have resumed. The promise that the arrears will be paid by September ending was not done. The promise was not fulfilled. Now they are telling us that only two months will be paid by 15th of October. And that one too, we are not sure. So if they thought school will never reopen, schools are reopened, teachers have come back, and we are demanding our arrears.
But I'm sure you are aware that it is not just Nagrat members who are owed some allowance and arrears in terms of their single spine. All public sector workers have some arrears to be paid. Why don't you channel your grievances through the TUC, for instance?
No, please. We are not under TUC. When we talk of organized labor, yes, we are not under TUC. We in Nagrat, we want our arrears. Other unions may not need it, but we teachers, we need our arrears. Because as I'm saying, none of the labor organizations have demanded for the payment of the arrears. It is Nagrat that has written even 3 times to say we are demanding the arrears. So maybe others don't need it. We need the arrears.
All right. We're trying to get a response from the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. We'll be speaking to the Chief Executive of the Fair Wages Commission, Mr. George Smith Graham, who will be joining us very soon on the phone. But I just want to find out from you, Mr. Agboibo, you do not think that you could have been a little patient for this thing to be done? I mean, why don't you maybe follow up yourself to the controller and accountant general's office? Why are you using the weapon of strike? Is that the best language you think the government understands?
Our members are giving us sleepless nights. They are not sleeping because of this. And therefore, we have to go in and make sure that our members get what is due them.
All right, I'd like you to hold on briefly. We've not been able to get Mr. Smith Graham, but we have on the line now Deputy Minister of Information, Samuel Okudjeta-Blackwa. Good evening to you, Samuel. Welcome to Radio Ghana.
Good evening to you, my brother, and good evening to all our listeners.
Is the government overwhelmed by all these strikes? Nursing trainees, doctors, Nagrat also threatening to go on strike?
We are very much concerned as a government. Indeed, we knew that implementing the single spine salary structure, which is a salary scheme that covers all public sector workers, we knew that it would be very, very challenging. And many governments shy away from implementing such major payrolls. But if you look at the roadmap, we thought that we had done enough consultations. We had been very open and transparent with the labor unions. We had let them in on our financial capacity as a nation. And that is why we even agreed with them on a roadmap that we would do a gradual implementation so that we will not migrate all the workers at the same time, but we will phase it out so that if teachers come on this time in the next 2-3 months, we'll bring in prison officers and the prison prisons personnel, or we'll bring in police personnel. After, we will bring in health workers, we'll bring in medical doctors and all of that. So as a government, we will continue to appeal to all our labor union leaders. I know that they come under a lot of pressure, but leadership is also about soaking the pressure and explaining to your followers why there could be genuine delays or you might not be able to get your expectations. None of us really in this country feels that we are paid how much we should get, right? From the President, the Speaker of Parliament, Chief Justice, everybody would wish for a pay rise to our expectation. But the issue is that we cannot really get what we want. Already, emoluments and salaries alone is taking more than 65% of our revenues that we generate. Be it as taxes or as levies, and we have just about 30% left for investment, for infrastructure, for building schools, building clinics, building roads, we look up to government to do so many things. So if we give all our revenues to salaries, then it will mean that we cannot expect roads to be built, schools to be built, clinics.
I think you may be right on that score, but this is what government has already committed itself to doing. Government has looked at its budget and has decided to pay arrears, for instance. Now, all public sector workers have arrears after about 13 months. Is the government or is the economy able to sustain this, to withstand this shock?
We will be able to if we are allowed to implement our roadmap. We want to be gradual about it. Don't forget that government is working very hard to expand the national cake. If you look at GDP growth, it is increasing. We have done better this year than we did 2 years ago. We are now the fastest growing economy in the world. We are also investing very wisely in the oil and gas sector. We are hoping to even secure this $3 billion from the China Development Bank so that we can add value to our oil and gas discovery at Cape Three Point, so that once we are processing the natural gas and we are able to create more factories and more industries, we can then be generating more revenue, and then we can handle some of these issues. But if we insist on now, everybody wants to be comfortable now, we will just collapse the economy. And that is why we are pleading with everybody, all the workers and all the union leaders, that they should be patient with government. They should keep an open door arrangement. The Fair Wages and Salaries Commission is very open, very transparent. They should never miss the opportunity to really engage them. And we are a government that keeps faith with the people. President Mills is a man you can trust, who will never want to, as it were, renege on the promises that he agrees with workers. So let's all be patient and agree to follow the roadmap that workers and the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission agree, and I'm sure that things will be fine.
I'm sure workers are comfortable with the roadmap that the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission has drawn for the ruling out of this how do you call it, single spine policy. But the problem is the promises that they keep receiving, sometimes from government officials, sometimes the Fair Wages Commission, which never get materialized. For instance, now we are told that NAGRAT is expecting their back pay, the 2 months of arrears, to be paid by 15th, but there are no signs that's going to happen.
I am quite aware of the NAGRAT situation. sometimes what has not been helping much is that even before union leaders come to sit with the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, they already announce a deadline, give an ultimatum, and insist that if things don't work out by so-and-so date, then they will go on strike. It will appear that the penchant for strikes and going to the table already with ultimatums creates a lot of anxiety, and we will appeal that a second look be taken at this approach. It is important that we sit first, judge off first, agree on some commitment, and then if we renege, then you can look at ultimatums and strikes and all of that. So let me assure NAGRAT and all teachers that indeed this is a matter that government is aware of, and we will also ensure that the Fair Wages and Salary Commission finalizes with them so that the necessary payments can be effected.
So you've assured NAGRAT and doctors, but specifically NAGRAT, who are now threatening to go on strike, is anything going to happen to them? Are they going to receive their monies by the 15th?
I will, as I've said, government will ask that the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission immediately sit with NAGRAT and find out all the issues they are raising and agree with them on a roadmap for immediate payments. I think that should be the best approach.
Okay, I'll be grateful if you could hold on briefly, because I want to have the final word from of Mr. Agboyibo and allow him to go, because we have other issues we'd like to briefly discuss with you before we let you go. Mr. Agboyibo, the Deputy Minister is assuring you that the government is working to make sure that these arrears are paid and asking you to try and sit down with the Fair Wages Commission. Are you going to do that?
Thank you very much. The Deputy Minister division is completely different from Minister of Finance and the Fair Wages. If this were to come from a personnel from the Fair Wages Commission or Minister of Finance, I would have been very comfortable. But the Minister of Information, the Minister of Information, his job is to talk, to defend the government.
Well, what are you talking about? He's a member of government, don't you think so? He's a member of government, so when he speaks, he knows what he's talking about.
Well, he promised that he will make sure that a rapport is made. And so we have given up to 15th. Today is 10th. There is more time. So if he can act within the time limit and make sure that things are done properly and teachers are satisfied, we are not interested in going on strike. Teachers and NAGA, for that matter, is not interested in going on strike. That is why we've given them some time. So I hope that he will keep to his word and make sure that the strike does not come on. It shall be very grateful to
him. Wish you all the best, Mr. Agboyebo, and have a good night.
Okay.
Mr. Akra, original chairman of NAGA, Patrick Agboyebo. So back to you, Mr. Okudjeta Blakwa. How about the doctors? Apart from the compulsory arbitration that the Fair Wages Commission is now employing to make sure that this thing is settled, is the government, through the Minister of Health, speaking to the doctors?
Yes, I do know that the Minister of Health has tried to meet with the leadership of the doctors. But before I finish that point, let me assure the chairman of the Greater Accra NAGRAT that I walked out of a meeting now with the head of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, and I would ensure that Mr. Graham Smith gets in touch with him and agree on a meeting so that things can be finalized.
So,
back to the situation with the doctors, that is also up for discussion now, and I'm sure that by tomorrow you would hear from the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission more detailed account of the efforts that have been made. The impression sometimes has been created as if the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission has not really opened up, done their best, and even met the doctors more than halfway and tried to really accommodate them. I'm just receiving a briefing now which points to the fact that after what has been agreed already, all the doctors are better off if you look at their migration to this this single spine salary structure. So it's not as if they are going to get the same or they are going to be worse off. So I think we all have to put ourselves in the shoes of government. If you are handling the purse and you see how already about 70% of all revenues we generate we are spending on salaries and emoluments, what really will be left? Because as a doctor, as a nurse, you still want to work in good conditions. You want your MRI machines to be working. You want your scanners to be working. You want to have your gloves. You want to have your equipment functioning. You want expansion in infrastructure. You want your lifts to be working. You want your beds to be available and all of that. So let us all try to have more patriotic and nationalistic approach to these issues, and I'm sure that we would find an amicable solution and build a strong country.
But just briefly on the issue of strikes, because it looks like strikes are what eventually pay off. So some say that public sector workers who do not, you know, exploit the option of strikes are those who are paid poorly.
I'm not sure about that. It's effective negotiation skills that pay off. There are some of the agencies that have been migrated. Nobody heard about them striking and all of that. But when you talk to them, they'll tell you they are happy. And it is largely because they have been able to negotiate more, if you like, efficiently, and there was good faith. So you didn't really see the process stalling. So sometimes it is the approach. Even before some of our friends in the labor unions are going to sit down, they are already giving you an ultimatum of October 7th, and they are, you know, really pointing to, if you like, a failed negotiation, that they don't expect much. Things will not work out according to their expectation. And when you go to the table in bad faith, then we have problems. So really, that is where the bane has been.
Okay, now finally, before we take leave of you, we allow you to go. The Mo Ibrahim Foundation has positioned Ghana on the 7th, you know, on its league table for African countries. What does the government feel about this position? Is a position we've maintained, actually.
You are accurate that we have maintained the 7th position. It will appear since 2008, but if you look at the raw data, if you look at the score, we have improved. In 2008, we were 7th with 64.3%. That's 64.3 out of 100 points. Today, we are 7th with 66.0%. If you look at all the four indicators, we have increased significantly. If you look at the area of safety and rule of law, we have increased by 0.4% as compared to 2008. Participation in human rights, we have increased by plus 1.1%. Human development, we increased plus 2.0%. And then in sustainable economic opportunity, we increased by 3.2%. Percentage points. So overall, you see that we are doing well, and the talk of a better Ghana is not a mirage, but indeed all of these statistics that they are putting together, the Mo Ibrahim assess statistics from 23 institutions and over 40.
But you didn't mention infrastructure and rural development.
Yeah, infrastructure and rural development comes under the human comes under the Human Development Index. And if you look at the raw score, if you go into the detailed report, you notice that though we are not doing well as a country, we are about 29 in Africa, you would observe that in terms of the figures, we have increased as compared to 2008, we have increased by plus 1.3. The infrastructure has been an age-long problem, more than 20 years or 30 years. We've really been lagging behind infrastructure. We need to be investing, experts say, at least $1.5 billion every year to catch up. And that is why President Mills has been proposing some bold initiatives, one of which is this $3 billion China Development Bank injection, which we hope that will be a bold investment in the infrastructure sector, because without infrastructure, you cannot develop very well. So we are conscious of that. This is just confirming that fact. But truth be told, when you look at the full data, you would notice that even there has been some improvement compared to 2008.
Is there a deliberate policy currently for rural development?
Yes, there is. There is. There's a very deliberate policy, especially with rural electrification. That is why you will observe that for the 8 years of the MPP, rural electrification was expanded by 11%. For our first 3 years, under 3 years, rural electrification has been expanded by 18%. We also saw our major social intervention opportunity, the poorest of the poor, the free school uniforms, we're starting from very deprived communities, the free exercise books, we started from very deprived communities. And then the elimination of schools under trees, of which 1,300 have been done so far, we started from the very, very deprived communities. So it is really a conscious effort to bring up, to really narrow the gap, to eliminate that schism between the developed rural, the underdeveloped rural, and the developed urban areas.
Okay, on that note, we thank you very much for being with us tonight, Sunny Okudzeto-Ablakwa. Thank you so much, and have a good night.
Thank you, my brother.
The Deputy Minister of Information, Samuel Okudzeto-Ablakwa. You're listening to Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra and all our regional FM stations across the country. You can also get us live. If you are in Liberia, it's gbcghana.com. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra, coming up, Agogo residents ban funerals in the municipality of Asantiyachim North. We'll be tackling that story shortly, but just a few text messages. This one from AU Farouk in Tamale. Abraham Doctors who do not value the lives of the poor will surely pay for any life lost during the strike someday. The striking doctors must ensure that they do not treat themselves and their relatives when they forsake, or else posterity would not forgive them. Andrew Mangai Mboku, all medical doctors, consider the strike and resume work, for the debt cannot be replaced, but your arrears can be paid. J.K. Wu Mampong. Ilyasu in Tamale says, Abraham, is the president still committed to the Better Ghana promise? What's Better Ghana when doctors are on strike of unpaid salaries? Mohammed Awul in Tamale, our doctors in Nagat seem to behave like the only hen that lays the golden eggs. Please, why can't they use the round table in solving their problems but strikes? Keep your texts coming in, 026-441-8767. Well, there is a popular saying that if persuasion fails, force must be applied. Perhaps this is the message some aggrieved residents of Aogo in the Asante Achim municipality are sending to the authorities as they carried out their resolve to ban the holding of funerals in the town. The residents want the authorities to find solution to the mayhem being caused by Fulani herdsmen in the municipality. According to the residents, attempts by the community to get the issue addressed by the Aogo Traditional Council and the Municipal Assembly has not yielded any results. Kwabena Osamwakon, who is Assembly Member for Ahimbronum at Aogo, maintains that the aggrieved residents were justified in banning the performance of the funerals. Good evening to you, Kwabena Osamwakon. Hello, Kwabena Osamwakon, are you on the line?
Hello, I'm on the line, thank you.
Good. Which group of people banned funerals in Asante Achim North?
It is the citizens of the entire community.
The citizens of the entire community, including those who lost their relatives?
I tell you that even some of the members have their mothers still in the fridge, but they are in the forefront of the whole action.
Can you lower the volume on the radio set? I'd be grateful if you could do that, Kwabena.
Yes, please, I have done that.
Okay, so which group of residents is leading this crusade to ban funerals?
You see, it is a combination of the Agogo Youth Association, Market Women Association, Assembly members, Unit Committee members, Civic Business Organizations, farmers, and the entire community, as I told you.
God forbid that this should happen, but if you die today, it means you are not going to be buried.
No, you see, banning funerals does not mean you shouldn't bury people. You can bury the dead.
Because you made reference to the fact that somebody's mother is in the fridge, yet the person...
Yeah, because they want to hold the two together. That is the burial and then the funeral. That's why the body is still in the fridge. And he is one of our front men.
You did not mention the traditional council, you know, as part of the group that is enforcing this ban. Why not?
Yes, because they are our target.
They are your target?
Yes. We want to drum this home to them, that we put them in place and they cannot take us for granted.
What exactly did they do that resulted in this?
Exactly that. They have they brought the Fulani. They have been collecting monies and other things from them. And when the Fulani herdsmen commit an atrocity against any of our citizens, they keep aloof without doing anything.
They collect what
kind of... All they are interested in is to sit in the funeral and then show off their power.
What kind of power?
Their power as being traditional rulers, and they wield some power in the community. So you find them in their big church, and then they are close with their umbrella on them, sitting in a state and then collecting donations. That is all that they know.
So you're actually punishing the traditional authorities by this action. Are they feeling it?
Very much.
How do you know?
Now, if you come into the community to see things for yourself, you find that now they even fear to come out. I mean, they can't come out in the open to show, to meet the people. No, they fear it.
So for how long has this ban been running, ban on funerals?
Oh, it started from the 6th of this very month.
The 6th of this month.
Yes.
And you claim that the chiefs and the traditional authorities are feeling this ban. Have they come out to say anything to you? Have you seen any move to act on your petition?
Well, we gave them up to 16th of this month, so we are yet to see. But if they don't do anything, then that's when we will take another step.
What exactly do you want them to do?
We want them to come out in the open and declare that the Fulani herdsmen should leave our land.
How about the assembly? You are a member of the assembly. You are an assemblyman.
Yes.
What are you doing in the assembly?
You see, that is where sometimes some people get disappointed. You know, the assembly, initially, a petition was taken to them that they should come in and then help solve this Fulani problem. Now they brought in some military men with the hope that they were going to drive these animals and their owners away.
Who brought the military men? The assembly?
Yes, the security, RegSec, regional security, and then
the municipal?
RegSec, yes.
Okay.
RegSec, and then those. They brought the military men. They are stationed, some are stationed at Agogo, and others are stationed at Babume, where the animals are, thinking that maybe they were going to drive these animals away. And the people of the town came out, I mean, generously to donate, to feed them.
To feed whom?
To feed the soldiers.
You mean the residents have contributed money and food to take care of the soldiers who were
prepared to give out anything just to sustain the soldiers, because they know that when they drive these animals away, they will have their food.
And what happened?
But lo and behold, immediately they reached Agob, the mandate for which they were sent changed. The mandate changed in the sense that they were told not to drive the animals away, but rather make sure that nobody goes in to attack or do anything that will hurt these Fulani.
So they came to protect the Fulani herdsmen,
exactly.
Rather.
Exactly that.
And not to drive them away as you expected.
Yes.
So
the people got disappointed, and they were even contemplating driving them out of the community center where they are stationed.
Okay, I'll be great if you could hold on, Mr. Osamuaku, as you speak to a spokesperson for the Ashanti Regional Coordinating Council of the Mens, he's called. Good evening to you, Mr. Mens.
Good evening, sir.
Now, what is the RegSec doing about the situation in Agogo? The residents have banned funerals. They are bent on making sure that the Fulani herdsmen are driven from their town. Is RegSec doing anything about that?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, and then good evening to all your listeners. Yes, RegSec is seriously in charge of the whole, the whole thing. As a matter of fact, let me give you a brief about what actually.
I'd be grateful if you could reposition yourself, because the line seems to be breaking. We're not getting you clearly.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, it's better.
Okay. Now, what I'm saying is I would like to give you a brief about what actually is going on. Now, the whole thing is not as simple as we see, because the chief of the place of Agogo, Nana Akrekosapo, he went into an agreement with the Fulani herdsmen, herdsmen are working for, and then they give them 50 years lease of the place to rear their cattle and all that.
And how many years have elapsed so far after the 50?
Come again?
How many years have passed since the agreement was signed?
I cannot tell, but I know that they have not gone even half of it. But then the problem is, once these people have breached the contract, the whole contract, now take the matter to court, because they can't just abrogate whatever that was agreement to me. They have to take the matter out to court. And so about 6 months ago, the chief of Agogo, Nana Akrekosapo, of Agogo, and to RegSec, that he is going to take the matter out to court. But for 6 months now, nothing has been done. So, as a matter of fact,
I'm sorry. Your line is breaking. You're finding it difficult to get you clear. But are you saying then that on the basis of this agreement, it will be illegal for the residents to drive away the herdsmen.
Exactly. It will be very illegal. What they have to do is, court must decide to, to eject them, because they have to first take them to court, because all the it was agreed. They signed all the documents, the necessary documents that were supposed to be signed. And so it's only the court which can be able to give that ejection notice, or to give the police or the soldiers or the people of Agogo that money to be able to drive the people out of Agogo.
But you agree with me that in spite of the agreement... Yes, go ahead.
Come again.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, so Rexet have decided that once the chief of Agogo is slacking in taking the matter to court, then we are going to invite the Attorney General into the case so that they will either speed it up or the Attorney General will take charge of the case and see what can be done. Because the paramount aim of the Regional Coordinating Council is to see that the people of Agogo have.
I'm afraid that your line is still not clear and you're struggling to hear you. I didn't know whether you can maybe take
can you me now.
It's still not too good. If you can just move away a bit away from where you are now, because
it's raining very heavily here. So
yes.
I believe that is where the lines are too bad.
So then the soldiers who were sent to Agogo, were they sent there to protect the Fulani herdsmen?
Hello?
I'm afraid the line is so bad. Maybe we'll try and get back to you if that would be possible. Now, Mr. Osamaku, are you on the line?
Yes, please, I'm
good.
On the line.
So I'm sure you heard what Mr. Menz told us. He said there was an agreement that was signed with these Fulani herdsmen, and until that agreement elapses in terms of the period for which it should run, nobody can drive the Fulani herdsmen away.
That is not true.
There was no agreement to say?
The agreement was made.
Yes.
The agreement was made. And initially, he made mention of 50 years. So when we contested, when this matter came up, he later on came to tell us that is, I'm talking of Nanaki Okusafo. Nanaki Okusafo.
Yes, please go ahead.
He summoned a whole lot of members of the community in his palace and told us that in fact he thought he was doing this on experimental basis, and gave instructions to them that they should not go beyond the limits of an area which has been defined for them. But these people have abrogated that. Also, he asked them not to and he asked them to dig some well which the cattle will be drinking. This they didn't do, and a whole lot of not to cause any havoc in the community, but these people are doing it. So on the 6th of March, he held a meeting and asked them to leave by 29th of March 2011.
And they have failed to move?
Yes, he asked them to move.
But they have failed to move away. Okay.
They have failed.
All right.
And so here we are insisting that he should carry out that decision that he made, the promise he made to the people, must be carried out. Because if he knew that he had to go to court before driving them away, then why did he come out? At that meeting, he could have told us that, no, let us take this to court, because he himself is a lawyer and he knows the law more than we do.
Well, I'm afraid tonight we do not have him to respond to the queries you are raising now. So I'm afraid we'll have to end it here. We'll be monitoring events at our group. Give it to our correspondents in your region and they'll fax it to us so you can...
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. And that was... Kwabena Osamwaku is Assembly Member for Ahimbrunumi Naogu. Now, the Executive Director of the West African Network for Peace Building, WANEP, Emmanuel Bombandi, he says Ghana should be careful the way she handles the issue of Fulani herdsmen. He's in London. Good evening to you, Mr. Bombandi. Welcome to Radio Ghana.
Yeah, hello. Good evening, and good evening to your listeners.
You want Ghana to be careful in the way it handles Fulani herdsmen? Why? In spite of the atrocities they are alleged to be committing?
No, basically, what we have been advocating is that when you have a problem, you deal with it and you tackle it from its root, from its source, in order to be comprehensive, in order to be holistic, so that whatever emerges as a solution becomes sustainable. Now, if you have been listening to this beautiful program, why is it that agreements, whether those agreements were informal or formal, within the understanding of a legal arrangement, why haven't they worked? It's simple. You cannot subject human behavior to legal agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we have to identify what is the issue at stake. The issue at stake is a conflict in which the nomadic pastoralist way of living, and here the Fulani herdsmen are overwhelmingly the majority of people who practice pastoralist living in Ghana, is in conflict with farmers who are crop-producing agriculturists. So the arrangement is about how you engage in the type of dialogue that reach out in terms of the human understanding of how to exist or coexist peacefully without one encroaching on the other. Now, in this particular instance, the perpetrators are the herdsmen, and you want to bring them to understand that when you allow your cattle to encroach on the farms of people in the Agogo area, you are bound to create an unacceptable situation. Not to mention the criminal aspect of it, in which your community overwhelmingly is now perceived to be behind criminal activities. And how we do that, you engage the influential people of the Fulani stock, including those who are the active pastoralists on the ground, together with the elders and the leaders of Agogo. You come to the type of mutual understanding that defines the type of coexistence framework, in order that they begin to hold themselves accountable to a new conduct and a new behavior that you can now monitor, you can sustain, and the district assembly now takes over in how this monitoring can prevail.
So you think basically dialogue is the way to go?
Absolutely.
But then the issue of Fulani herdsmen is widespread. It's not just Agogo area. So there's something deeper than just applying dialogue. I think that a solution goes beyond that.
I will be happy to share with you the report that we came up with after our regional West Africa conference in Ouagadougou in February. 7 countries participated, and our challenge now is to take that dialogue to national levels. And believe it or not, what is happening in Ghana is nothing compared to other areas. As a matter of fact, the Jos Plateau crisis, part of the component of the Jos Plateau crisis, is precisely this conflict between pastoralist communities and agriculturalist communities. And we have understood very clearly, with key leaders of all communities, including the Fulanis, and up to even the level of ECOWAS, and how we arrange and engage at that level, that it is dialogue, a new behavior and attitude, that now makes it possible to have a sustainable solution. Let me give you a very quick explanation of this. What we have gradually done is to ostracize the Fulani community and make them feel that you are not even a people, we want you to be part of us. You are not part of our community. And what we are doing gradually is making them have a sense in which when they commit criminal acts, they are doing it because they feel they don't belong to us. And because they don't belong to us, when they hurt us, there's nothing wrong with it. We must turn them around and let them know that if you come onto our land, you are living with us, and you cannot do things that hurt us and think that you can go ahead with your way of living.
But these are people who are armed. I'm not sure that there's time to engage them in any meaningful talk.
It's because gradually we have refused to acknowledge this problem, and that is why the menace has reached this point in which they are not armed. A few years ago, Fulani men were not armed on the highways. This has become a recent phenomenon. It tells you that we have failed. How did it start? we have what we call Operation Cowleg. Our armed forces round them up, drive them with their cattle. They feel humiliated. We push them out. Then they return. So what they started to do was to arm themselves to fight.
Is it a national security issue? Who should take the lead in engaging the kind of dialogue you're talking about?
That is a very interesting question. I think that the institutional structures are there, beginning at the district level with the assemblies. And to that extent, if the threat is now what we have been able to appreciate it to be, it requires government to take leadership in this. And from national level, I think it even requires a total ECOWAS engagement on this factor, on this phenomenon. So that at the end of the day, what we are seeking to address is how there is peaceful coexistence in communities, particularly between pastoralists and agriculturists. Let me put it this way to conclude on this aspect. Let's imagine that next week, you round up every Fulani and drive them out. The question you should be asking is, are you driving them out because they are Fulanis, or are you driving them out because of the activity they engage in? If it's the activity they engage in, which is grazing their cattle, you'll be amazed that 80% of the cattle they own is not theirs. It belongs to Ghanaians. And I'm telling you this for a fact, growing up in the north as a young boy, our family homesteads would give their cattle to the Fulani to take care of. They now have the milk. And all we do is we own the cattle, and anytime we want it, we go for it. And they take care of it for us. That is what is happening across the country. So the majority of the cattle is for Ghanaians. It is just that they are taken care of by Fulanis.
I see. On that note, we thank you very much for this wonderful exposition on this discussion. I'm sure that we'll continue another time. It's always wonderful having you on this show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Emmanuel Bombande is the executive director of the West African Network for Peace Building, WANEP. Well, Liberians go to the post tomorrow in a tight race between Nobel Prize winner President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and rival Winston Tubman as the nation seeks to cement its fragile 8-year peace. But this will be the second democratic election after a brutal 14-year civil war in which 25,000 people lost their lives. Tonight, we would like to look at the elections in Liberia. Tomorrow, Dr. Ken Ausu is a research fellow at the Legon Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy. Lesia. Good evening to you, Dr. Ausu. Welcome to Radio Ghana.
Good evening.
So what are the prospects for this election in Liberia?
Well, so far things have turned out well. We didn't have any relapse into violence. So the expectations are that certainly it will be a peaceful election. Well, when we say peaceful elections in Africa, even the successful ones, certainly there will be skirmishes here and there. But I believe that the presence of the international community, particularly the United Nations forces and the ECOWAS forces, they should be able to contain any uprising or any mishappening that may come about.
You think there could be something like that? Is it because of the history of the country? Have it come up?
Not so, you know, after conflict, a major conflict that lasted for so long, when so much infrastructure has been destroyed, and over 75% of the children are still not in school, people who have built the country, there is so much corruption, only a few people are actually having better life. These are grievances that will certainly blow up when people see candidates like Udewia, can redeem them. But if such people do not win votes, a few people may like to take things into their hands and that sort of thing. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. But not a major upheaval that will relapse into a major conflict. But then, certainly, when you are planning for these type of things, you should know that there is a lot of grievance. And people are so much embittered that so far things have not changed. But as we've seen in African society, a few people do extremely well. So there is bound to be a few skirmishes here and there.
Okay, Dr. Housley, if you could just hold on briefly, I'd like us to speak to a journalist in Liberia. I want us to listen to the kind of report he has on the process to the election tomorrow. The president of the Press Union of Liberia is Peter Kwakwa, and he's joined us from Liberia. Good evening to you, Peter. Are you in Monrovia?
Good evening. Yes, I'm here.
You're in Monrovia?
Yes, I am.
Good. So how has the process been so far, the campaign process, you know, preceding the election tomorrow? Has it been peaceful?
Well, relatively, it's been peaceful. It passed off well. Campaign ended yesterday midnight. Parties were all in the streets trying to end up the campaign exercise. And there were isolated scrimmages, but generally it was peaceful.
What kind of skirmishes are you talking about?
Obviously when you have participants converge in a small city like Monrovia with a huge crowd, each side full up, you can imagine that they met in some quarters, and those kinds of interaction can sometimes be a little fussy.
So what are the issues?
Absolutely, in my opinion.
What are the main issues for the campaign?
Main issues?
Yes.
Well, there are several of them that have come up, and the argument is around corruption. The opposition is arguing that the government hasn't been able to adequately deal with the argument of corruption. The government is put up a defense. Yes, there has been a time where they've been raising the awareness around corruption, and hopefully the next term of the president will be the time to punish those who will be involved in corruption. So, corruption is one of those issues. But the president and the incumbent have been also defending his position the last 6 years. Development, the economy, and many other issues that the government has been able to put up. Okay. As justification for a second term.
Okay, Peter, hold on briefly. I'll come back before I let you go. Dr. Ahosu, just to find out from you, do you think that Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, if he's incumbent, has an edge over the other 15 contestants because of the prize she won, the Nobel Prize she won?
Well, let me take you back. As I talk about corruption, the journalist is talking about corruption, but there are other issues. One main issue that the intellectuals or the main opposition are raising against Luke Johnson is the fact that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission has come out with a resolution that all those who have worked with Charles Taylor should not be engaged in active politics at least for 30 years. And a lot of people are very critical of Luke Johnson for the support he had given to Charles Taylor in the past. And the argument is that in the first place, he's not supposed to be taking place in this, but then it's a very difficult situation.
All right, Dr. Ahosu, I'm afraid we'll have to end it here. Tomorrow night, we'll be calling you again for another an analysis on the issue in Liberia. Thank you very much and have a good night. Now, Peter, briefly before you go, who do you think is winning tomorrow? We'll be talking to you again tomorrow after the polls. But then, in Liberia, what's the feeling like? Who is going to win?
Well, I'm afraid I don't want to go there. The argument has been that the ruling party is anxious to win first round, and the opposition is so this is not possible. So there's going to be, there has been, obviously, during the campaign period, there has been some show of strength. The two parties that are leading right now, the CDC of George Weah and Winston Truffman, and then the ruling party of Madam Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, they've been able to put up some very huge crowd from both sides, and I believe that was certainly to show how strong they are, and so we have to wait and see what happens. But as far as we know, many a times the incumbent will have a lot of urge in these kinds of arrangements.
We'll call you again tomorrow.
Later, hopefully.
Okay, Peter. Tomorrow.
Translated in the pool.
Okay, tomorrow night we'll get back to you for an update on the elections and the results. Thank you so much and have a good night. Peter Kwakwa, the president of the Press Union of Liberia, speaking to us from Monrovia. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Just a couple of text messages or so. Abraham, I have been promoted from the rank of Superintendent 2 to Superintendent 1 in April, and yet can't find the proof on my pay slip. I am a teacher. Why teachers? Jerry is asking. Ghana is now in strike season, all because of how the SSSS was first implemented. Now workers feel they are being cheated. Nicholas Asiedu, Chinchinku. What is the Nagrat man saying? Just because their members are on them, they must embark on strike. God save Ghana, Baba Musa UDS says. Teachers need the arrears because we are suffering. Alex Asinfosu, educated as they are, doctors should consider that they are under oath. Coach Wugu and chiefs of various communities are causes of the problems people have with Fulani herdsmen. Chunla in Pandai says, so finally, all Liberians should work towards a peaceful election tomorrow. They should never turn the country upside down again. And Dumanga in Boku. And that's it for tonight's edition of Behind the News. The program came to you live from Broadcasting House of the GBC in Accra. This program is always produced by Christopher Sedu, Edmund Tete, Bright Agama, and Kingsley Obinchwe. Technical producer, Enoch Walker. Production assistant, John Poby. My name is Abraham Asari. Have a good night.